when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, hello, and welcome to episode 16 of Prepping 2.0. This episode, we're going to talk about two things. First of all, prepping must be practical. And the second thing we're going to talk about is Antifa, joke or threat. There's two schools of thought on this. Fascinating stuff. Shelby, how can folks listen?
Oh my gosh, there's so many ways that they can listen to our show. We are no longer saying podcast because we've grown in so many different ways. However, we have a great group of fellow authors that are part of a group called The Written Apocalypse. If you go to writtenapocalypse.com, you can find those other authors. You can check out the very vibrant podcast they have going, and we're featured there. So I encourage you to go check out if you're really into dystopian books like we are. And I hope that you are. We just did a whole group of episodes on our books and why they're so important to people. You can check out other books as well. So, The Written Apocalypse. The other one is John Jeffers over at Contra Radio Network. I encourage you to go look that up. And you wanted to
love
say something
show.
To that.
I love the John Jeffers brief, the Jeffers brief on Contra Radio Network. And Contra Radio Network is one of the many ways to listen to us. Contra Radio Network's on iTunes.
Absolutely. And here's what's really cool, too. Contra Radio Network and our show are picked up by radio station KYAH out of Utah, Utah's Talk Authority. So that's one of the ways you can listen to us on regular radio. Hello to everyone in Utah. You've been great fans of us for a long time now, ever since really the start of our show. Two new stations have picked us up just like now. So you may be listening to us for the first or second or third time, I'm not sure, on KYKN out of Salem, Oregon, as well as KSLM out of Salem. Let me give you the time slots on that because these are brand new. At KYKN, you can listen to our show on Saturdays at 10 a.m. at KYKN.com, or you can pick it up on the AM station. There's also KSLM, and we are there on Sundays at 6 p.m. What's cool about KSLM is that you can listen at 1220 a.m. or 104.3 FM. So we're growing. Isn't that cool?
It is cool. And I think this will be one of the collector's episodes because in the future, very near future, we'll be on so many radio stations that we won't be able to tell you the times that we're on all of them. It is on the website. It'll be on the website. But we just wanted to celebrate the fact that the terrestrial radio station empire is growing and letting you know when to listen and thanking all of you listening on those regular radio stations. Thank
you. Absolutely. And I will say this, if in your area, if you're like, hey, there's an AM station that would really enjoy us and it would be a good fit with their programming, send us a quick email, glenntate123@gmail.com or shelbygallagher321@gmail.com, and we'll reach out. We want to grow that. We really think this is prepping is a message that needs to get out more and more. And I think people are more and more wanting to listen to the good ideas we talk about.
Heck yeah. Well, speaking of good ideas, one of the things we do in every episode is we look at the top 100 things that disappear first, and we go through them one by one and mention a little bit about them. This one, yes, Shelby.
Well, let me just complete that sentence. The top 100 things that'll disappear in a collapse situation.
Yes, that's right. Not top 100 things that'll disappear when the New England Patriots lose a Super Bowl. I mean, we're talking about real crises,
exactly.
Not fake ones. Number seven is big fanfare, big buildup. Oh, this got to be important. This got to be something you didn't think of. Guns and ammunition. Oh, really? Oh, okay. The list is great.
Yes.
But guns and ammunition is pretty obvious. I would say that, especially males listening to us, of the 100 items on the list, guns and ammunition probably get about 85% of their attention to the exclusion of others. And that doesn't seem very practical.
It's not very practical. And that's really kind of what we're going to talk about today, which is why we're not going to spend too much time on number seven. But we are going to spend a lot of time on the idea that you just talked about. By the way, this list is on our website at prepping2-0.com. We just looked at number seven. And that is that prepping must be practical. and you can't get laser focused on one thing, and it certainly cannot be a hobby. And you and I have met people, and they're not very many. When we talk about these sorts of people that we're going to talk about today, these are definitely people in the minority, but we want to bring them along and kind of re-inspire them as to why we do prepping. And it is not a hobby. And we know a lot of people out there that are kind of like hobbyists. And the example I thought of was a couple months ago, you and I were out at Sandpoint. We always talk about that. That was such a great event. Sandpoint Preparedness Expo, visiting with a friend, and the friend was was renting someone's house and said, yeah, this guy had started, he's talking about his landlord. This guy had started prepping, you know, back in the previous administration, and we're looking at the guy's pantry. And I just looked at everyone around me and I said, this is a start. And it was quite obvious to me, as a hobbyist prepper, there was a few cans of food, a few packages of pasta, I think a couple of packs of matches. It was a pantry. It was not. It was a hobbyist, a person who thought of himself as a prepper, but certainly wasn't. If a collapse happened, this person would be in harm's way.
Yeah, and we always encourage starting off small.
You got to start somewhere.
Your
Absolutely.
Book one describes starting off small. I mean, you know, you start prepping by buying barbecue sauce.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're not like all, you got to have $1 million compound. But the point is the mindset.
Yes.
And the mindset isn't, I'm going to spend all my time on the internet looking stuff up and not actually doing anything. Because prepping requires you to get out of your comfort zone. I've had to do it. You've had to
yes.
do it. And a classic example of that was it was a Facebook post, blah, blah, blah. And somebody was talking about, where can I get the absolute best price on 25-pound bags of white rice? And it became apparent to both of us that this person was pretty much obsessing about saving a penny a pound. And I'm going to now speculate, this guy probably was driving all around town looking at prices for rice, spends an entire, maybe I'm going to say Saturday afternoon,
yeah.
right? Looking for the best price on rice instead of going and buying 25 pounds of rice and spending that afternoon vacuum sealing it. You can't just think about this stuff. Now, you need to think about it. You need to plan. But for goodness sakes, this is practical. The results that count are, for example, the amount of rice that you have sealed and saved up and you're able to use. It's not going on, you know, a forum and telling your friends that you saved a penny a pound.
Right.
I don't know what it is about, you know, some preppers and I, by the way, I ran into this too. I kind of had to outgrow this. This was me, because I'm used to spending my time comfortably sitting in front of a computer, you know, not exercising or anything, and just letting my mind wander about different prices and stuff. But now we have several pantries full of rice, which is what counts. It's
yes.
like in gunfighting, only hits count. Only getting it done counts, and that's the practical side of this and not the theoretical, you know, mind game. This isn't Sudoku or Minecraft or anything like that. This is real life. So, and you ran into a great example of this. So
this
tell folks about this.
I love this. So if you want to see how this kind of works itself out, and this is what we see on my author page on Facebook, Shelby Gallagher - author, you can see I think it was December 31st. Yeah. And it was kind of one of these end of the year, let's put this up and be inspired by it. It's a list that I put up. Actually, let me take that back. It's a list that I used several years ago, how to prep on a budget. And I even said that I used this exact list years ago to get started prepping on a scarce budget. And it's how to build your food storage with only $5 a week. And so 1 week you buy 6 pounds of salt. 1 week you buy 5 cans of cream of chicken soup. The next week you buy sugar. And then it kind of starts repeating itself. So just to describe it, or you can go look at the list. The comments were
disappointing.
Disappointing and exactly what you just described. People, there was, what are you going to do with 12 pounds of salt? That's one comment. Well, I hope you didn't want to, there's the whole, what about all that sugar? What about if you're diabetic, you're going to be in a diabetic coma in a week. When was the last time you could buy 10 pounds of flour for $5?
And see, that's that whole,
that hypercritical.
Yes, that we call it horse shacking.
We do.
And those of you who, you know, are roughly our age, you might remember the late 70s TV show, Welcome Back, Kotter. There was this character, Horseshack.
Was his name?
Yeah, and he would always raise his hand because he was so proud he knew the answer, and he would be, ooh, 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 Mr. Kotter. That was how he
said. And he was a high school student in kind of the special class of people who were kind of not quite, they're a little dim. Ooh, 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 ooh. And it's a Horseshack thing. And he had nothing to say that was really pertinent to the situation. It was attention getting. And that's exactly kind of what happened there. But I remember saying a couple times, you know, folks, this is a guideline. I mentioned that this is an older list. If you don't want all the macaroni that's mentioned, pick something else. But at the very least, $5 to $10 a week, do something that gets you that much closer to prepping. That's all it was a guideline and something to kind of just kick off the new year. And it's crazy to read through the comments, and I can share some more. Excellent list, stupid order, put the high calorie stuff like flour more towards, so now we're being critical of the order of the things. Keep in mind they kind of repeat themselves. They start out with about five or six things, and then they go back and repeat. 8 cans of soup, you'll see several times through the list. How are you going to store all this? Who needs it? Just, it got a little bit crazy, and I just finally had to turn off the notifications and just let everyone argue amongst themselves. And it was really sad because the whole idea was, folks, every week, do something to prep. And that's something that you and I have really embraced.
Yeah, and I don't want anyone listening out there to think that Shelby and I are doing a podcast about some comments to one of our posts and we're like arguing with it. That's not at all it. It's an example of the wrong mindset.
It's the hobby mindset.
The hobby mindset and the I'm just going to sit on the computer and you know, chip away at little teeny factoids instead of going out and doing stuff. And that's our point.
And let me just add this too. So if I could rewrite this list, and maybe I will next year, because of inflation, and this is an older list, I would change it to $10 a week. And then $10 a week, what would Shelby do? And I do this, if you follow me on social media, what can I do with $10 a week? Well, this week, actually, I just posted it recently, huge major sale on pork shoulder at a local store where I can get a hunk of pork loin shoulder bone in for 99 cents a pound. I'd buy one or two of those and freeze them away and have them and store them up. And that's a perishable item. If not, I would go $10 worth of canning supplies, $10 worth, it's springtime, $10 worth of seeds, $10 worth of matches, $10 worth of a fuel, $10 worth of some ammo. I don't know, something that I can store away, if not use now, well, can have on hand for if a collapse happens tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And we are big believers in just do it, which would make an awesome slogan for a shoe company. What,
yes,
they stole
would.
That? They stole that from me.
No, but we spell it D-E-W, just, okay. I don't know why, just because we don't want a phone call, right?
But you have to go and you have to just do it. And that's what's going to get you along. Prepping 1.0 might be that 47th list that you have about what needs to go in your bug out bag. And prepping 2.0 is getting it done.
Pick a list and go do it. Just do it. Get that bug out bag done. Get the food stores, the 30, 60, 90 day food stores put away, however you want to do it. That works practically with you too. Our food stores, what we have in our preps, you and I, Glenn, are going to be, and I've talked about this a lot, are going to be very different than the family with 4 young children. It's going to be very different.
Absolutely. And one of the things we're doing today by airing this episode, which mildly criticizes maybe some people listening to it, which we don't really enjoy doing,
really,
but we need to do it.
We don't want to, but what we want to do is inspire people.
Motivate.
Kind of shed that kind of mindset and go, no, I just need to do something.
Right. And this episode, this topic segment is about motivating people because we've been there. We've been there. I've got hung up on all the little internet forum stuff and then going out and doing it and being so busy vacuum sealing rice that I didn't have time to go figure out that I saved 2 pennies. So it is, and here's a great thing, speaking of motivation, and this is what we do. We put up once a week, usually on Sunday evenings, a post Facebook, all of our Facebook pages, called What Did You Do This Week to Prep? prep and we read the comments. The comments are amazing. The comments are
amazing. And what's really cool is they're inspiring and they are a little bit of everything.
And people reading all those comments get inspired. I've had numerous people say to me, boy, please keep up that weekly yes. post, because I look at what everyone else is doing and I say, geez, I need to be doing that, or I did this. And there's a lot of pride when you post that thing. You say, got 25 pounds of rice, vacuum sealed it, put it in tubs. I mean, good for you. You're telling the world what you did, and that is good stuff. So this is all motivational, the stuff about being practical and not being a hobbyist, because that doesn't get it done.
Well, I will say to those people who post there too, and I feel bad for them, because I know they say it in a guilty manner. I worked, you know, 5 overtime shifts this week or some, and I'm like, you know what? Working hard to support your family, that's prepping. Thank you. Thank you for being the good, honest, hardworking American that we all know and love, and supporting your family. So working hard and working overtime shifts and working crazy schedules, there's no guilt in that. There should be a lot of pride in that. So for those of you who post that, good on ya.
Yeah, exactly. And as I've said several times, but it's really important, we're yes. not like the millionaire preppers, and we don't judge people. But if you're working all those shifts, let's say, good on you, first of all. But second of all, go and get the $5 thing, the $10 thing, and that kind of thing. And you're way ahead of the guy out there that just spent 4 hours on the internet
yes.
arguing about which trigger is best for an AR-15.
Yeah.
Only hits count.
Exactly.
Only hits count. And so you got to be motivated and go get some hits.
And I will say this, there are times when you and I, we're like, we didn't do anything much this week, but we have to sit there and think about it, and that's fine. So I will also say this, another term that we use, let's go back to the horse shacking term. There's a term that you coined called philpers. What is that?
Yeah, it's short for philosophical purists. And it came to me when there were political arguments, and we won't get into political stuff here, but the political argument would be something like, Donald Trump just did one thing out of 1,000 that I don't like, so he's no good. And this isn't a Donald Trump podcast or anything, but it was this idea that everyone had to be, well, that's actually not true. This idea that somebody out there would raise their hand like Horseshack and tell the entire world that they're philosophically pure.
That they were right. I told you he's a bad guy, or I told you he was a good guy. I told you that it's kind of an I told you so.
It is an I told you so, yeah, philosophical purist. Well, how does that relate to what we're talking about,
yes.
about driving around and buying rice? Here's how it relates to that. I would never buy that kind of white rice because, and I'm just making this up, so I can't really finish the sentence. Or, don't at all buy this bulk cereal, for example,
yes.
because this wasn't grown, you know, by monks in China with absolute purity, the Whole Foods preppers
yes.
versus the Walmart preppers kind of thing. And this philosophical purist thing is a great way for people to do several things simultaneously. Number one, not actually get anything done, right? Sit and comfortably rip on people about the kind of cereal they bought on sale. And number two, it allows everyone that's doing this to raise their hand and horse shack away
yeah.
and talk about how philosophically pure they are. And so that isn't helpful. Don't be a philper. Here's the thing. If you're a prepper, you're supposedly all about adapting and being practical and making do with as little as possible. If that's the mindset, and it is the mindset, why are you getting all philper and telling people that the last thing you could possibly do is put away cereal that is not GMO free?
Right.
Well, guess what? You probably shouldn't eat GMOs. I get that. I try to live that too. But when you're talking about getting bulk food that will last, that other people will eat, maybe not everybody loves goat cheese. It's got to be stuff people will eat. You have to compromise. Oh my goodness, yes. Yes, you have to be practical. See,
yes.
full circle. That's why everything we're talking about relates back to being practical and getting it done, and not sitting around and talking to 4 other people in the country on some forum about how philosophically pure you are and feeling good. You know what? Feeling good about being philosophically pure is a poor substitute for feeding your family.
Yeah.
Let's just be blunt. That's what we're talking about here. So go ahead and horse shack away. or feed your family. Again, we're not making fun of people out there in the audience. What we're trying to do is motivate you. And here's the thing. It's so easy to slip in to this because I've done it. I don't think I did it full on. I don't think I was out telling people about GMOs, but I would sit there, and with me, it was guns, by the way. I can't possibly have anything but an aim point red dot that's $600. Well, guess what? Now there are great red dots for $60. There's way better ones for $120. It's that elitism and not getting it done. What are some examples you have?
Well, I'm going to kind of you just picked on yourself. I'm going to pick on you a little bit more. You're really good about this and your self-awareness of, I get into a rut. Well, and you just described it.
I get into a rut
that this is the only one way to do this. And then and we talked about this in the beginning episode, but you stand back and you go, oh, wait, there's new technology, there's new ways to look at this. And if I'm serious about prepping, I need to be flexible and adaptable and think about it. And I know we only have a couple minutes before our break, but let me just throw this in here. You did a post and about how you and I got you, because you like to put together what you called homeries, which is home MREs that are cereal. They're like your own trail mix. And again, the whole GMO, are you going to eat all that bad cereal, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know what? When you're hungry and granola that is made from organically grown oats out of Central America, whatever, is not available, you'll eat what you can. So again, it's the whole being adaptable, look up a little bit, be practical, and let's move on. And let's remember that we're arguing with the people that we need to get along with in a collapse.
Exactly. And well made that point. And the other thing is normalcy bias. What you just described is people, including me, having a touch of normalcy bias, which goes something like this. Well, I always get that cereal grown in Central America that's $17 a pound at Whole Foods. I always do that. Well, I just need to have more of that cereal. No, you don't. You need to have cereal, because eating GMO, you know, breakfast cereal for 6 months won't kill you. Not eating for 6 months will kill you.
Yes.
But it's this normalcy bias. And here's the thing. We've talked about, when it comes to food preps in particular, we've talked about layering. Here's a great idea. This involves budgeting and layering and normalcy bias. Get some inexpensive food. Just start. Just do that. That's the budget thing. Get out of your rut. That's the normalcy bias thing. I mean, I have a bunch of Spam, for example. I don't eat a lot of Spam.
I don't look forward to it, but I have it because it's needed.
And that's the layering. Have some goat cheese if that's what you want. Have some Spam. Have some GMO cereal. Do all these things and layer it in, because here's another normalcy bias fallacy out there. If you just take this week's grocery list and think you need like 100 of those, here's what you're missing. There are other people. There might be people that you take in. There might be family members. There might be all of that. And they may be just fine with Captain Crunch.
Absolutely.
So we're going to close out this segment, but I think we made our point very well about being practical. So next, we're going to come back from a break, and we're going to talk about Antifa, joke or threat.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, Prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Do you need a custom Kydex holster or magazine holder? Glenn Tate's favorite custom holster and mag holder maker is Northwest Retention Systems. You can select your holster or mag holder color, including the I Miss America logo, and Northwest Retention Systems will custom make yours. While you're at it, look into the Scout Chest Rig Holster. Glenn loves his for vehicle operations and for fishing. Made by a young craftsman supporting a growing family of young patriots, Northwest Retention Systems products are 100% American-made with no foreign parts. Find out more online at northwestretentionsystems.com.
Hello folks, Shelby Gallagher here, wanting to let you know about a great event coming up, the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. It's on Saturday, March 30th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton, Washington.
It's going to be great. This is Glenn Tate here. We're going to have John Jacob Schmidt speaking, Representative Matt Shea, simulcast on 1400 AM KITZ Radio. Look for us on Facebook, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo 2019. Come on out and see us.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, welcome back to the second segment here of episode 16. This is the segment we're going to talk about Antifa, joke or threat. Now, I'm going to assume everybody out there knows what Antifa is, the so-called anti-fascist, the communists. They are communists.
Yes.
And anyone that disagrees with me, let's go ahead and, you know, we'll argue that out. But they're communists, typically younger. Typically kind of, and I'm going to use a lot of generalizations here, so don't get on me, listeners, about the generalizations. Millennial punks. They're millennial punks. They're often, I think this is accurate, they're loners or weirdos who don't fit in, and they want to have like a big group to fit into, so they decide that they're going to get together with all the other losers with Che Guevara t-shirts and start talking crazy talk about overthrowing the government of the United States in a violent communist revolution.
I will say this, though. The Antifa that I've seen, and this is, and I always talk
You've seen
about,
them up front
I've
and close
up,
in Portland.
In Portland. Yes, what you just described are kind of the foot soldiers, the masses of them. They're dyed purple hair, lots of tattoos, piercings, and they're just kind of
millennial punks.
Then there's the leaders. They tend to be the older millennials. I'm going to say late 30s, early 40s. They're the organizers. They're the ones who are paid. They're the commanders. And they are the ones that have the walkie-talkies. They're the ones who are the organizers. And they are being paid. And they're the ones that are getting messages from higher up. And you will see, and it's just like an army. You will see, there's one of them per about every 50 to 100 of the others. It's very organized. It's kind of frightening, actually.
And I'm glad you made that point about the organization and the financing, and particularly about the leadership, because that's the thing. That's the big debate here. There are two schools of thought on this. One is people will, usually guys, will look at all these millennial punks with their weird hair, and they'll say, oh, geez, you know, soy boys. I mean, you know, one punch and they'll go crying home to their mommies. And I think on one level that's true. I don't view most of these foot soldiers as anything like the patriots that we have who train. But then you bring up a really good point. There is organization, there is supply, and the leaders of Antifa,
funding,
the leaders of Antifa, from what I can tell, they are stone cold, deadly, tyrant communists. They want, and anyone that disagrees with me, maybe you should quit
Convince
listening.
Convince us otherwise, right?
Those leaders of Antifa want to put you in a camp and starve you to death. And I'm telling you, they're communists. And by the way, Google, you know, communist body count, 20th century, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yep.
And so they're extremely dangerous, the leaders, and dedicated and well-funded and effective. So you've got this weird dichotomy on the outside. You mentioned one leader for 50 to 100,
yep,
you know, millennial punks. Well, if you look at the 50 to 100 millennial punks, you're not that worried. But when you factor in what you were talking about, the really good leadership, all of a sudden,
it's a game changer.
This is a game changer. So what we did is we put up on the Prepping 2.0 show Facebook page, on Facebook, great page, by the way, I put up a picture of one of these kind of stereotypical millennial punks. I mean, he's kind of a pathetic looking guy.
Well, and let's describe him, though.
Yeah.
He's out of shape. He's no older than, I would say, 25. Keep going.
Yep. About 25, and just kind of got that living in mom's basement look, looking for a club to join. We're not going to dwell on the physical aspect, but I think that's really good that people understand the picture that all these comments are going to be reacting to. Now, here's the thing. One of the things we love to do is get listeners involved in the show. And so we're going to name off some names of people who commented on Facebook and, you know, kind of the Antifa is a joke post, because there's some validity to it, and the Antifa is a real threat.
And this, and this is, honestly, this is no criticism of either, whatever side you want to take. I don't think there's sides necessarily. There's no ridicule here. Our idea with this segment is to kind of flesh it out and discuss what, and continue the discussion from the post from January 5th. So, and in case you don't know, if you haven't figured out, I have a cold today, so there might be a few moments where I mute myself and I like go into a coughing fit, and Glenn will take over at that point. So go ahead, Glenn.
Well, thank you, Shelby.
Yes.
January 5th was the Facebook post. So I'm going to read some of these, and then we might have some, you and I might have some comment.
Yeah, this is fun.
Ray Henderson says, legitimate threat. Don't underestimate them, and don't get overconfident.
Loved it.
Heck yeah. I have friends in the special operations community. I was never in the military. I'm not implying that I'm cool, but I have friends who know this topic well. They know insurgencies. They know special forces guys that do insurgent sort of counterinsurgency stuff, and they've dealt with Antifa-like street punks organized by cunning political assassins in very many countries. They know their stuff. To a man, they tell me, do not underestimate Antifa. Don't get caught up on the Facebook part of it, which is, right, you know, the goofballs. By the way, there could have been 100 really good fighters that were not pictured because whoever took this picture wanted to make fun of this one hapless kid. And so you don't know. So when I always listen to professionals, and when they say, take this seriously, I do. And you have a thought on this.
I do, because the very next comment was by Preston Green, and it hits on what we were just talking about. He said this, I'd say it'd be much like 70-20-10 rule. 70% will be jokes, 20% will be serious, and 10% will be serious threats. And it's exactly that whole, what I just talked about, that whole, if you take a group, you take a whole Antifa in its totality, yeah, there's the large percentage of them are the foot soldiers, the wayward youth who are just looking for purpose and like the idea of feeling like they belong to something greater and all of that, which is sad. Then there's the 20% that are the kind of the on the ground commanders. And then there's a few up in an office somewhere, you know, doing comms. That's an army. And here's the other thing. We were talking about this before we put this all together. Think about our own military. And boot camp, you take all these 18-year-olds that are fresh out of high school that are barely, if, or maybe even just continuing puberty, and they're wayward and they're kind of without purpose. They're now in boot camp where they feel purposeful. And within 8 to 10 weeks, they come out of boot camp and they know how to fire a rifle. They know how to, they're in better shape and all of those things. That's exactly what Antifa is doing with this sort of a person. I bet he looks very different now, and I bet in the next year or so, he's gonna kind of grow up through the ranks if he continues with Antifa. That's what we need to pay attention to. Yeah, right now he's kind of a newbie that looks kind of silly.
Well, and you mentioned the training that could take place.
Yes, they train.
They train, and we all think of events that could trigger Antifa running wild. The events that could trigger it are not going to be an overnight thing. It's not like all of a sudden they're going to start, you know, jumping out of their mom's basements and fully ready to go. There's going to be a training period. And you know, the irony with this is patriots out there who think Antifa is a joke. Think about this. You understand and count on the fact that our side is going to have 6, 8, 10 weeks to train up. Think about the 299 Days book series. You know, you've got special forces out in a remote farm training up folks, and it takes a while to train them up, and they get really, really good. Well, so patriots, don't think that training only works for us. Now, I think we have tougher people. I think we have
resiliency,
more moral people, morally decent people, which, and that it takes. I think we have the warrior spirit. I think we have advantages, but the other side will train up, and they will, and they have tons of money. This is going to be a recurring thing you're going to hear from us today. Soros and whoever else, the Antifa has tons and tons of money, and we've seen I've been in a gun store 2 weeks ago in Portland, and there were these lefty goofballs who came in and were buying guns. By the way, good on you, here, have two guns. I'm fine with that. I think everyone should have guns. But these, you know, the left is arming up, and there's this hysteria among the left about Trump being a fascist dictator, which is ironic because the left are the fascists. But anyway, Trump's a fascist dictator. We better get a gun because my neighbor, that guy who goes to church, is going to come over and try to impose his religion on me by shooting me in the face. That's what they think. So they are arming up too. And the 100 million guns or whatever that have been sold in the past 3 minutes or whatever it is, I mean, we're always breaking new records on gun sales, cannot all be just patriots. The left is arming up. And here's the thing. I don't get into conspiracy theories. And I think that anybody that talks about foreign intervention in an American crisis is usually a little bit loopy. I will say this. I changed my mind on this, actually. I think it's more possible that, say, China sends boatloads of AKs over if we're going at it with Antifa. And here's why. Normally, I think that's crazy. The reason I don't is that special operations dudes have told me, oh, yeah, and there's going to be boatloads of Chinese stuff, because they've been around the world. They've seen it. They've seen China doing it. They've seen Russia doing it. They've seen us doing it. It's how you do this. It's how you overthrow a government. You support indigenous resistance forces. And so while I don't think the Chinese army is going to be on the corner in our town tomorrow, and I don't believe in any of that fairy tale stuff, there would be foreign support. I have two examples for you. How about the first Civil War, where there was foreign support? Remember what the British were doing with the South? And then the original War of Independence, which was kind of a civil war. Anyway, the Revolutionary War, as people are fond of calling it. How did we win again? I don't know, France? Isn't that weird, by the way, looking at that now? But Yorktown, how did that happen? The French. And so this is how countries try to deal with other countries. When there's a foreign thing, they try to infuse resistance.
Well, and let me add this too. China is great for this very move. They've done it historically. When there is unrest, political unrest in a country, especially nearby, and they're watching it burn down, the country, the infrastructure starts to become very weak, they take it over. Ask Hong Kong how well that worked out for them. You know what I mean? So they would love to see America deteriorate, and they will help it deteriorate by putting arms in the mix, so that when there's that void of leadership, guess what they do? Hey, we're here to save. We're the leadership you need. Right? They do. That's communism.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is not as far-fetched as my point.
Right.
And my basis for that is, I'm a lawyer. I always think about evidence. This is not far-fetched. I have two pieces of evidence. Number one, special operation dudes who know what they're talking about. And number two, history.
Yeah.
And those are two pretty good sources to overcome that. So am I hugely worried about the Chinese army, you know, parachuting into our little town? Not at all. But I am worried about, I don't know, the Chinese ports in northern Mexico, in Tijuana. It may not be Tijuana, but very close
Central
to the US
America.
Border. Yeah, and all of that. I don't want to get off on the Chinese tangent.
So let me bring us back here. So we just went from, you know, garden barely variety Antifa, you know, foot soldiers to that. But let me add another comment that I think really adds and really kind of brings an exclamation point to what you're saying. Mark Fulator, I hope I say your name right.
Fulator. He's Fulator. A colonel in the books.
Nice.
He's a super good dude, by the way.
Awesome. So, didn't know that, because you use some pen names, but not all, in your book. So, his comment was, and it gives a good point to what you just said, fanatics with hearts filled with hate. They are organized as well. The fight will not be standing armies. They are the type to lob a Molotov through your window at 3 a.m. Yes, not only, I want to add that, not only is Antifa learning gun rules and how to use firearms, they're training in guerrilla warfare, and we know this. Watch how they riot. They destroy. They break windows. They throw Molotov cocktails. They bring bats that are lined with nails. They, and it's that the they use those tactics that are not typical warfare. It is guerrilla, it is urban, it is messy, and it is violent.
It is unorganized in the sense of not being centrally controlled, but it is organized in the sense of the message. And here's, I'm so glad that Colonel Fulitor, I hope you're listening, Colonel, brought this up, because this is another, I think, fallacy of the Patriot community that I fell into until I listened to dudes. By the way, Mark has a background where he knows what he's talking about.
So yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, but it's going to be messy, and it's going to be the, and I'm making all this up, but this is pretty accurate, I think, sort of that Republican city council member and then some Antifa person who realizes the police aren't going to stop anything because stuff is deteriorated. And I'm not talking about the situation in Portland, Seattle, and San Francisco and other places where Antifa can do what they want because the police have actually said, dear Antifa, you can do whatever you want. I'm talking to any town USA. Listener, the town you live in, there's some pastor who's outspoken, some Republican city council member, whatever it might be. And then you're right, 3 a.m, a lone wolf dude, and this kid in this picture, this 20-year-old, you know, goofball, goes and throws a Molotov cocktail in somebody's window. That's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a bunch of millennial punks living in their mom's basement turning into Delta Force.
No.
Because they don't have to be.
They
because
don't.
A Molotov cocktail through your window is just as dangerous as a tank coming down your street, number one, because it's going to burn you up just as bad. And the other thing is the reaction of the general population. Antifa doesn't need to have a tank because one Molotov cocktail in the Republican city council member's window burns his house down. The public is freaked out and scared.
It's terrifying.
And is terrifying. That's what terrorism is. And they've accomplished what they want to accomplish with a glass
Very
bottle
little.
And a rag and some gasoline and a lighter.
In other words, it's not complicated. And here's a good one for you too, another comment. And that's what I like as we're doing this, is I'm throwing in comments that bring to our point. Now, I will say this too, there's comments in here that really do just kind of make brutal fun of this kid because he looks kind of goofballish. But the one that I appreciate is from Donald Lowndes, talks what you're just saying. Differentiator. If you prep, walk the walk and don't just talk the talk. Threats come in all forms. Great comments. So if you're going to be a prepper and you are trying to learn how to assess threats as they're in front of you, when you don't have all the information, that's the problem. You look at a picture like this, oh, he's not a threat. Well, you don't know that he has something in his pocket that all he has to do in his simplicity is push a button, throw something, you know.
And here's the thing. Yes, you're exactly right. Second, third, and fourth order effects from that Molotov cocktail. I mentioned the general population freaking out. Factor that in, because in warfare, it's not just a freeze frame of kid throwing Molotov cocktail through window. It's more than that. It is all the reaction. Maybe the police decide to clamp down, all of that other stuff. And so you have to look at the full picture.
Yep. I think that has been a great thing to look at. I'm kind of going back here and pulling out some of the comments. Here's another one. Frank Holmes. They are definitely wussy soy boys, but they are indeed dangerous. At first glance, they seem like an easily obtainable food source, and some of them are indeed a good source of fats and some proteins, but caution must be used. I'm not going to continue that because he goes on to a different thing, but yeah, there's some we're not going to repeat some of them, unsavory, basically name calling, but I think the best one is anyone carrying a firearm coming at you is a threat nonetheless.
Exactly. And this is encapsulated well in a blog piece that has become somewhat famous on this topic. It's on Mountain Gorilla, and it's John Mosby, who is a former Special Forces dude. And it's called Skull Stomping Sacred Cows, in the sense of all those sacred cows out there need to be skull stomped. He says reality isn't nice. It's a 2x4 to the teeth. And he goes through this whole thing. Again, SF guy has worked with indigenous forces, has fought insurgencies. And he's saying, yeah, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be personal. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be these sorts of things. And that is the toughest thing to defend against. Really, when you think about it, some random kid doing this kind of stuff. And so that's why I listen to these guys.
Well, and here's the thing, and let me just throw this out here. For all the moms out there, for all of us, let's just say this kind of, you know, weak-looking kid comes knocking at your door during a collapse when Antifa's rioting or whatever nearby, or there's, you know, oh my gosh, I need some help. This guy coming to your door saying, I need some help, oh my gosh, will tug at those heartstrings, those mom strings that we all have, those, oh my gosh, I need to help this poor kid, he's helpless. It goes reverse, too. He knows he can easily be taught to lie. Obviously, he's engaged in this, and he's wanting to be indoctrinated by Antifa, so he'll be taught how to lie. And let me just throw this out here, too, and this gets off a little bit. ISIS is really good at this. All they have to do is train their version of soy boys how to run a van through a crowd in Europe, and it's a very simple model for how to create the most damage and the most chaos. You don't have to be a rocket science or know the insides of how to create a grenade to do such things.
And you bring up an excellent point. We've been focusing on Antifa for obvious reasons, but look at Europe.
Yes.
And look at the Islamist insurgency in Europe. Again, anyone want to debate me? Bring it on, because that's what it is. And that is a perfect example of low technology, low cost. When your life means nothing to you and you want to die, which I think is more common of the Islamicists than the Antifa ones.
Yes.
Those Antifa kids really do want, you know, their lattes and their video games and all that other stuff.
Well, and low technology, low, and I hate to say it, but almost low intelligence. You don't need to have a degree. You don't need to know how to fly a fighter pilot to do this, you know? Fly a fighter airplane. Let's try that again.
A little cold medicine, listeners.
Yes.
A little cold medicine hitting that. And I'm looking at some of the comments, and I won't repeat them. A lot of them are
disparaging.
Kind of a little bit
edgy.
Salty language that we don't use, especially on terrestrial radio. But if I may summarize, a lot of them are making fun of the kid and, you know, based on appearance and all of that other stuff. And I get that. And I feel it too. This is the thing. I'm being really honest with everybody. I'm not going to be all, well, I'm 100% correct. And here's this. I mean, I look at this kid and I'm not at all worried.
Right.
But there's more to the story, I guess, is my point.
Well, and let me add this too. Here's the thing. This kid, wherever he is, whoever he is, it could come about that he finds our page, our Prepping 2.0 page, and sees those comments. So here's the thing. Do we want to try, the bigger scope is, do we want to throw away the millennial generation? I prefer he not see some of those comments and see more of the comments of the constructive threat or not a threat instead of the name calling. Because I would rather have that kid go, you know what? I don't want to belong to a communist group. I don't want to be part of this. I would rather see if we can change him to the other side of being patriot and freedom-loving instead of communist and racist, honestly.
Yep, and all that being said, if I see the kid with a Molotov cocktail, I'm dropping him.
Yep.
Here's a great thing. We have another minute or two. A great observation. And you know me, the lawyer guy, I always go to evidence, even anecdotal evidence, but I look at stuff like that. It's Chris Smith. He says, whatever name you want to put on them, I've seen some of these folks actually getting training at the local gun range.
Yes.
Now, doesn't that say it all? This is really, really happening. Well, there you go. We hope we got you thinking. We need to go. The time went so fast. Shelby?
So quick thing, we have about a minute or so here. I'm going to let people know how they can reach us. First thing is our website, prepping2-0.com. You can see past episodes. You can listen to past episodes there, and you can link to all of your favorite ways of listening. iTunes, radio stations, things like that. Then there's our author pages. And I will say this, if we had a fun week recently on our book week. We just did this big focus on our books that we've written. We were authors before we were show hosts and had some great interviews there, especially for those of us who are just joining us in our new radio markets. Encourage you to go listen in on what really caused us to start ticking in the prepping world, and that was writing books. So there's that. And you can check those out. Glenn's page is 299days.com. That's where he has all of his cool things about his book. And you can reach him there. On my page, it's agreatstate.com. And I encourage you on both pages, sign up for our newsletter. We send those about once every week or two, just kind of giving you an update of where we're going and what we're doing. Cool thing coming up the last Saturday in March, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo in Bremerton. Come join us. We'll be there signing books. You can purchase our books. And we're looking forward to bringing prepping to the whole Western Washington. As far as we know, there has not been an expo in that area, right?
Yeah, there's 3-4 million people living in the Seattle area, and there are never any prepping expos because everybody thinks, oh, everybody in Seattle's, you know, worthless or something. Well, there's a lot of us out here, and so that's right. Puget Sound Prepping Expo, March 30th, 2019, Bremerton, Washington. You can find details. It's going to be really cool. We're going to meet folks. John Jacob Schmidt from Amron and from Radio Free Redoubt is going to be broadcasting. Representative Matt Shea, a real leader in the Patriot community, yes, is going to be there. Well, Shelby, why don't you take folks out with your signature line?
Love it. It's a signature line from Benjamin Franklin. Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.